fresh peel, ripe brand strategy, juicy insights and trends. Chris Wilson here, author of The Fresh Peel at freshpeel.com. And today with me I have Dan Burris, who's considered to be one of the world's leading technology forecasters and business strategists. He's also the CEO and founder of Burris Research, as well as being the author of numerous books, including Flash Foresight, which is his latest book, and will be our topic of discussion for today. So Dan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So before we jump in, why don't you just give us a little bit more background on yourself? You know, what is it that you do, and how do you do it?
Yeah, for the last 26 years, I've been running a research company, Burris Research. What we do is research global innovations in all areas of technology, lasers, robots, genetics, fiber optics. We do that globally. And before I started this company, actually, I've started six companies altogether. Four of them were national leaders in the first year. One, it was in the experimental aircraft business. So I'm actually an entrepreneur that's been very successful. And before that, I taught biology and physics. So I actually have a science background. So what I did is I applied my science background to coming up with a way of predicting where technology-driven trends were going and where technology was going. And over the last, again, quarter century, it's been extremely accurate. And if I look at the advising that I've been doing to corporations and government leaders and all over the world, really what I help them do is learn how to anticipate rather than just react, and how to find and see the invisible solutions to their problems, as well as the invisible opportunities that are not there in front of them. So the reason I titled Flash Foresight, the reason I gave it the subtitle, How to See the Invisible and Do the Impossible, is because in my consulting and my speaking, that's what I help clients do. I help them do what they think might be totally impossible by uncovering, the hidden solutions to seemingly impossible problems, or the hidden opportunities that they didn't even know were there. And by the way, once that invisible becomes visible, that's when you get that flash of foresight, that, aha, didn't realize you could do that. And then you can move on and shape your future.
What led you to write Flash Foresight? What need did you see for a book like this?
Well, I saw that, and again, this is part of the certainty I talk about in the book, that technological change is driving the pace of change so fast that, as a matter of fact, we're now getting into what I would call a phase of transformation, which is very different than change. And I can talk about that in a few minutes, but that the general way that businesses and governments deal with this and with change is to react. That's why agility has been such a good topic, because you got to be agile if you're reacting all the time. So change comes from the outside in, forcing people to put out fires, crisis management, and be really busy. But being busy doesn't help. Didn't help Lehman Brothers. It didn't help all the people that took out all those speculative loans. It's a matter of fact, being busy actually is part of our problem. We need to be more strategic now. So I wrote Flash Foresight because it's important now for us to be anticipatory, because all of the transformational changes that are just now happening.
Before we jump into some of the specifics of the book, can you give us just kind of a 1 minute or less summary of what Flash Foresight is? And you've already touched on a couple of things there, but just kind of summarize and package it up for us.
Yeah, very quickly. First of all, the Flash Foresight itself is when you get this sudden insight about the future that reveals invisible opportunities and solutions to what you might think is a seemingly impossible problem. And so I focused on seven principles in the book that would make the invisible visible, because that's when all of a sudden you have this burst of foresight. And the seven principles I've been using over a 25-year period and have helped so many different individuals, companies, organizations, even governments do impossible things. And the book is filled with examples of that. That I wanted to share those principles with the world so that, you know, everyone could be empowered to do these things. And that was my big motivation for writing this book.
Something that you defined early on in the book was the difference between hard trends and soft trends. And it seemed to be a crucial point. What exactly are hard and soft trends, and how are they different?
Well, that's a great question, because one of the first principles of the seven in the book is start with certainty. Because in an uncertain world, you don't have any power. I mean, what's going to happen with the price of gas? Are the Democrats and Republicans going to get along with each other, or are they going to just continue to bicker and not get any problems solved? See, that's uncertainty. It doesn't help us. So what I have to ask is, am I certain about anything? And the answer is, I'm certain about so much, it's amazing. Because you see, strategy based on certainty has low risk, and it frees you to move forward. So a hard trend will happen. A soft trend might happen. In the present, they both look valid. And what I do in the book is show how to separate the two. Let me give you a quick example. There are cycles. For example, right now it's winter, next will be spring. The stock market, it goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down. But then there are linear changes. Once these things happen, they will never go back. Once you get a smartphone, you're not going back to a dumb phone. Once the Chinese park their bike and get a car, they're not going back to bicycles. Once they get a refrigerator, they're not going back. So 78 million baby boomers, for example, in the United States, they're not going to get young again. That's not cyclical. That's one-way path, linear. They're going to get older. And by the way, when you got 78 million people getting older, you can predict the future very clearly about services they'll need, issues they'll have, and problems that also present opportunities. Now, a soft trend is something that looks good in the present, but might happen. For example, gas prices will definitely get more this year. Well, that's a soft trend. We don't know that for sure. There are things that could change that. Another soft trend might be the economy. The economy will pick up and get better every month. Well, that's a soft trend. We don't know that for sure. That's not guaranteed. There have been a declining number of doctors and nurses in the United States every year for the last 10 years. Will that trend continue? Well, that's actually a soft trend. Or will there be more multi-language websites? Yes. As a matter of fact, will the next iPhone have more processing power, bandwidth, and storage, even though they haven't introduced it yet? And the answer is yes. So there's so many things we do know about, that's where we have some power.
The book is organized around what you called the seven radical principles, and you already touched on that a little bit. But without giving away all the meat of the book, can you give us a glimpse into what those seven principles are?
Sure. One of them is start with certainty. I mentioned that already. Another one is that we are in a time of great transformation, not change. Let me just give you a quick example of what that means. When I was a young guy, I could listen to my albums, one album per spinning disc, 33 and a third speed. Then, as I got older, they came along with a new technological change called a CD. So now I could get one album per smaller spinning disc, and I got rid of the pops and the hisses and the scratches, so that was a good change. Now I've got all my music in my phone, and along with my videos, my emails, and everything else. That didn't change how I listened to music. It transformed it. So in that same way, we're about to transform how we sell, how we market, how we communicate, how we collaborate, how we innovate, how we train, how we educate. So if we're only changing those things over the next 5 years, we will fail. Because if you don't transform it, someone else will. So transformation is one of the another principle. Since transformation is going to happen, whether you like it or not, one of the principles is to redefine and reinvent. Because based on the certainty of transformation, this is the time to redefine and reinvent your career, the business you're in, the markets you have, the customers you have, and the products and services we have. If we don't, once again, someone else will. Another one of the seven principles is to take your biggest problem and skip it, because that's one of the great ways of seeing invisible opportunities and solving impossible problems. So let me just take a few minutes on that. I'll take two. The reason, whatever problem you've got right now, the reason you can't solve it is you're working on the wrong one. Why do you can't solve it? Your problem's not your problem. There's another problem. So to find the real problem, it's like an onion. You have to peel it back only a couple of notches, and you can find the problem and easily solve it. Give you a 60-second example. a big company, Eli Lilly. They said we had a problem a number of years ago. Now, right away, I had an advantage because I knew that whatever they would tell me, that wasn't it. So they said, our problem is we have to hire price up. Our problem is we don't have a budget for the 2,000 researchers. So then I used the principle. I said, take your problem and skip it. So what did they do? They took their molecular problems, posted them on the internet in a dozen languages, and said, we pay for solutions. Now they've got thousands and thousands of researchers submitting solutions to Eli Lilly, and Eli Lilly only buys the solutions they want to buy. So was their initial problem, we don't have enough money to hire 2,000 researchers, really the problem? And the answer is, of course not. That's why they couldn't solve it. You have to peel it back. So that's that principle of taking your problem and skipping it is huge. One other real quick one I'll give you, because I know our time is short. Opposites work better. That's another thing that makes the invisible visible, helps you to see new opportunities. For example, I was just in New York. They had big stores and malls filled with beautiful Italian expensive shoes. What's the opposite of expensive leather shoes? And the answer is a really ugly plastic shoe. By the way, that's a Croc, and Crocs made billions of dollars in profitability. So it, you know, the opposite can work in an amazing way to see those invisible opportunities. One of the final principles, like I said, there are seven, I'll just mention very quickly, and that is to direct your future. You see, too many of us sit back and let the future unfold day after day, week after week, month after month, and all of a sudden we're old. And what I want us to do, and I'm very passionate about, is that we need to actually ask ourselves, how can we create a better tomorrow using the tools of today? Instead of being passive and reactive, I want us to be active and anticipatory. Take an hour a week out of your week. I know you might think you're too busy, but remember, busy doesn't help. And unplug from the present and plug into your future. After all, that's where you're going to spend the rest of your life. Ask yourself, what are the changes that I can see, that I can predict, that are coming ahead, that I know with certainty will happen? Just like we know the next iPhone will have more bandwidth, storage, and processing power. What else do I know? And you'll be amazed at how much you'll see. And then take actions on that certainty. Shape your future and make it better instead of hoping it will be better.
In the book, you also cite some specific case studies of brands that we've all heard of, and you mentioned Crocs before. And I thought that was an interesting choice to include, considering the serious nosedive that the company took. It seems like Crocs came in and out of style in a relatively short time frame. And if you look at the company today, it looks like it's making a slow comeback, but it seems to be a slow and painful journey for them. You know, where do you think that Crocs misstepped? And this seems to be a common occurrence among other brands as they find their cash cow or their wave to ride, but then they seem to struggle in identifying what's next. How can brands avoid this damaging cycle?
Well, Chris, that's an excellent example that I get into in the book, and that is that companies innovate. And again, Crocs came up with a fantastic innovation, and frankly, they did one of the principles in the book that I talk about to redefine and reinvent the marketplace, and they did go opposite, as I suggested in just a few minutes ago. But what many companies do is they create a cash cow, and the minute they create it, they just start milking it instead of continuing to innovate and decommoditize. So one of the concepts in the book is to decommoditize your products and services continually. Just like we had continuous improvement long ago, you got to continuously decommoditize, which means continue to innovate. So in their case, they relied on style. Well, frankly, style goes in and out, as you mentioned. So it's in today and gone tomorrow. So it would be much better to be finding other competitive methodologies. For example, patents. There is a brown shoe company that I've worked with in the past. They're a Berkshire Hathaway company, very big company, by the way. They realized long ago that competing on style was a difficult thing because styles are in and out. So they started competing on patents. So as they developed new processes, they patented those processes and then licensed them to other shoemakers, making far more money than they would have made just on trying to fit a fashion niche. So I think what happened with Crocs and happens with so many companies is they give birth to a cash cow, they start milking it, they start drinking their own Kool-Aid, thinking they're so cool, and they stop innovating, and they only have one dimension of their product instead of making it multidimensional and taking it out in other ways. So we can't fall prey to that. We need to continually innovate. And the seven principles that I shared in the book are great principles to allow you to continuously innovate and redefine and reinvent your marketplace instead of doing it just once and then hoping that you can ride it out for years.
Reinvention seemed to be an underlying theme in the book. In fact, with many of the examples, you illustrated how a perceived problem wasn't truly a problem at all. By redefining the purpose of an industry or brand, they had a much clearer picture of the future and what possibilities lied ahead of them. What tips do you have for brands who are looking to redefine their purpose?
Well, that's an excellent question. I don't think you have to rebrand yourself because you do have history, and that history can power you into the future, but you have to understand that we're in a time of transformational change now. This is a certainty. We're no longer just in change, and we're at the base of a mountain of this, and that means that we need to rebrand, or really, I would say instead of rebranding, I consider it a strong brand migration based on the visible future, based on certainty. So if you take the time to ask yourself, what am I certain about? What are the hard trends? What are the cycles that are fully predictable and the permanent changes that are taking place that I can see? I just am taking the time to look because that's what I'm suggesting we do. Then I would like you to ask yourself, how can I migrate my brand so that it looks like I am increasingly relevant to my customers and my customers' customers rather than decreasingly relevant because I'm not keeping up with the pace of change? You know, we have to ask ourselves, are our customers changing faster than we're changing? Are they learning faster than we're learning? And in many cases, the answer would be yes, which is, by the way, not a very healthy situation to be in. So once again, what I want to do is not be behind the curve. I want to be ahead of that curve. And a lot of people would say, well, I don't want to be on the bleeding edge. And I would say, well, then don't be on the leading edge instead. The people that are on the bleeding edge didn't separate the hard trends from the soft trends and didn't use the anticipatory methodologies I'm talking about. So they did a lot of bleeding. But you can lead without bleeding by, first of all, looking at where others are innovating and succeeding. And secondly, you can do it by really focusing on what you do know instead of the things that you don't know.
And what part does abundance thinking versus scarcity thinking play for brands looking to reinvent themselves?
In terms of scarcity, we cooperate with our business partners. When we think in terms of abundance, meaning that there is abundant opportunity out there, then we start collaborating with them to create a shared future. One of the reasons Bill Gates has so much money is he understood abundance a long time ago. Everybody, or not everybody, but most people are using Microsoft Office, Microsoft Excel. Well, that abundance is what's made him abundantly wealthy. It's all based on realizing that there are endless possibilities, endless customers, endless financial gain that could be done. All we need to do is to take the time to think of it and to act on it. So the key here is taking the time on a weekly basis to shape your future, unplugging from the present and the crisis and plugging into your future and what you do know about it, and then asking, what are those opportunities? What are those, now that I've looked at the future, what are the problems I'm about to have? And then solve them so you don't have them in the first place. And look at where is my customer going? The things that I do know, the things that I can see. Well, that insight alone could help you create amazing new products and services. So I think that this is an amazing time in history, but we won't be able to capitalize on it if we have a scarcity mindset.
Thanks, everyone. This is Chris Wilson from FreshPeel.com, and I've been interviewing Dan Burris, the author of Flash Foresight, Find out more at flashforesight.com.